Welcome to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth, and another week of Fansgiving, the most favoritest time of the year, where you, the fans, pick out the movies that we do, which are basically randomly picked by people that hop in our DMs and just give us suggestions out on the streets, all seven of you. But this week's pick is from Brian Myers, and boy, oh boy, did he pick a doozy of an episode. We also have some more Honest Ash segment in this returning bit. We're just going to keep rolling with it. I also have a fun story about the great a great Swisher Sweet salesman who sent me a hat. And you know, listen, I'm really helping out the brand here, so you're going to want to listen to that. But hey, if you're a big fan of the show, you love Fansgiving, go ahead, tell a friend. You know, word of mouth goes such a long way in this world of ads and sponsorships. We have no money. We need you to just like tell your friends to listen to it. But whatever you want to do and you feel comfortable with, please, for the love of God, just tell some people and they like them listening to the podcast so I don't have to cry at night. Anyway, all that stuff. And you know what? While you're at it, leave us a 5-star rating. We need some more. We only have like 25 or 26 on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. So if you give us some more, we'd really appreciate it. And that would really help us out. Costs you absolutely nothing and means the world to us. So without further ado, get strapped in. Crank that volume up to 11 and get ready for The Blob.
Kiddies, it's your old pal, the Crypt Keeper. This is a big shout out to my friends at Quality Time Podcast.
Picked up like four or five of them along the way there.
What is your background?
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me move out of the way so you can see this. That's a picture that somebody drew for Louis C.K., and it's supposed to be Louis C.K., but it really looks like Louis C.K. in blackface. And somebody...
It looks like LeBron James.
It does a little bit.
So I went to Magoobies, and this was in Andrew's office. They said somebody, a fan brought this to Louis' show and wanted to get it signed, and Andrew did not ask him to sign it, and it's just been sitting there. But I think it looks a little bit like Michael Keaton in blackface more than that.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the white lips really say, you know what? It is blackface for sure. That's all I know. So
you know who had a lot of problems with proportioning in art?
Who's that?
That'd be Hitler.
Hitler. He had to pass. Yeah. Welcome back to the Quality Time Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Woodworth, joined by my blood, my brother, Mr. Jeremy P. How are you, sir?
I don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, my gosh. Well, who's joining us on the program?
It's me back from the dead, Steve McQueen.
Oh, it is. It's the Steve McQueen from the original Blob film.
Yeah, I figured I'd catch up on this new movie you guys are watching. This is the year 1988, right?
Yes, this is 1988, and
yeah. I hope they're going to remake this movie because it was a great movie. I was only like 18 back then.
Yes, he was an 18-year-old.
Yeah, just like Jack Nicholson was 18 when he made Hell's Angels on Wheels. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, he was.
Playing the kid.
Well, that's great. I'm glad that you chose to be Steve McQueen. Hey, fun fact about this movie that we're doing tonight, which is the Blob 1988 for Fansgiving. Shout out Brian Myers, who suggested this movie probably like over a year ago to us, but we didn't get him for Fansgiving last year. But we got him this year. We're doing the Blob for him. Now, before I introduce my other co-host, Steve McQueen, obviously, you know, played a teenager in the original Blob in 1958. When they made the remake of this, they actually offered one of the lead roles to Chad McQueen, who is Shad McQueen, which is Steve McQueen's son. But the only reason he didn't do it is he refused to ever take a role that was one of his dad's roles. He never wanted to reprise a Steve McQueen role. So we got no Shad McQueen in this movie because of that.
Shad McQueen as Bullet Son.
Bullet Son. Oh, and this other sultry voice that's hiding in the background there is none other than the very lovely, the very talented Miss Ashley Pontius. How are you, love?
Hi, Colonel.
Colonel. Now I'm the Colonel.
As a Colonel in somebody's shit.
Oh, they're words, but they hurt. They're words, but they hurt.
Aww, I didn't say it.
You have
time.
A job. You've actually held a job for more than a year.
Yes, yeah. So, hey, since Jeremy is out of work, guys, this is a perfect time to promote the Pogo Gator. You can directly help out Jeremy and I's financial situation by hopping on there, buying yourself a Pogo the Clown Gator, protect you from COVID-19 and the terrors of this world. Plus, they look pretty sweet. We actually just sold our second one very recently, so I'm waiting for that to pop back up and somebody to post a picture of it, so...
That's
there
awesome.
You go. I will say that the great Mac Bergson, because I feel comfortable talking about him in my capacity, Mac Bergson sent me some stuff, and I actually had a Swisher hat from Mac
That's
Bergson,
right.
And I was wearing it on Laugh Finder the other night, and he texted a screen cap of me wearing the hat on the Laugh Finder podcast, and he sent that to his boss. He said, look, we've made it. We're now on the Laugh Finder podcast. And he goes, what's that? It's a podcast about board games and stuff like that. And he's like, people actually listen to that shit? And they're like, and then he goes and doubles down. He says, yeah, you make a podcast about anything. You can make a podcast about taking a shit. And so I also told him to subscribe to the Shitcast, which is Eric Woodworth's new vehicle. It's where I review movies while taking a shit. And so check that out for fall 2021. This weekend, we just got through Halloween. I know you guys are getting this mid-November at this point, but I had a great Halloween, really fun times. My mom came over, and my sweet mother was here, and I learned a story about my mom from my sister that was kind of fucking crazy. And I think this will tie into what happened to Ashley this weekend. So I was told by my sweet sister that my mom lives with my sweet sister now. And mom occasionally will take some gummies that are CBD gummies just to take the edge off. You know, that's a non-psychoactive version of the weed, right? It's just supposed to be the calming stuff, but none of the psychoactive, which is THC, right? Well, let's just say mom got her old things crossed in the thing and maybe ate a 50 milligram edible and lost her mind one night to the point where she wanted to go to the hospital, and my sweet sister had to say, your vitals are 100% fine and you're just really, really high, and I'm so sorry that you ate the wrong thing.
Wait a second. Did just one of those gummies was a 50 milligram?
Yeah, yeah.
How many do they have in like a little bottle?
I don't
know. You have to understand the dosage.
Well, like for me, I've done like a 10 milligram, and that's pretty, it's strong enough where I'm like, all right, I'm chill. And like, that's like a level where I feel comfortable, is not like a regular everyday user. And she did five times that. So...
But hopefully she just ate one of those and not like a whole handful, like eating them like candy.
Yeah, I think she just had the one, but it was enough to freak her out and felt like she was, this was her last time on Earth. So
that was, all right.
That was a fun story. And now, Ashley, you had a very similar pod experience recently with a show last night.
Okay. So yes, I do sympathize with your mother. Strapping. Audience, I know that pretty much Jeremy and Eric know the story, but I'm going to take you on a ride. So last night,
I'll pretend as if I'm hearing it for the first time.
In Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. So no, I don't care. So last night I was doing a show in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at a private residence for a private gig. And I get there and one of the comedians points out that there is a table literally selling edibles. And I'm like, well, that's nifty. I never do any of these things. I want to participate. So they are selling an herbal infused drink. And I'm like, that's great. And they did tell me, hey, just remember you need to sip on it. Like, don't drink it all at once. I'm like, okay. So I start sipping on it. And I'm like, I don't feel shit. I'm fine. And I'm thirsty. So I drank the entire container in about an hour. And everyone knows that I was told how much was in this container. And it was about 400 milligrams.
Oh! That's uncomfortably high. At what point do you think about calling the hospital? Take us through your mentality. When did it kick in?
So it kicked in right as I was walking on stage.
And to perform. So you got to do, now you're in front of a group of people as it's just like, wop, 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 wop.
Yep. So I'm like, and I'm like, oh my God, as I'm walking on stage, I'm like, it's happening. So I get up on stage and I look at the audience and I was like, hey, fun story. I just did this thing. And the entire audience audibly gasps together. And the lady yells out, get her water quick.
So was everything that was inanimate showing lights like Brian in the movie Brain Damage?
So that's kind of funny. Very so similar. The lights were crazy bright on the stage, which did not help. And then to only further my paranoia, I must have lost a contact at one point, which I always pack my glasses, but I lost a contact, meaning I could see out of one eye and not the other. And I was internally freaking out that I couldn't out of my one eye. So I made it through. Apparently, I did very well. And then as soon as I got off stage, I grabbed one of the other comedians. And I was like, I'm freaking the fuck out. I'm not doing so great. And then it was cold. And I was like, am I frozen? Can I not move anymore? Like, what's happening? And then I leaned over and I said, I'm sorry. I just showed you my bra. And he goes, no, you didn't. said,
oh, okay. Oh, that's good, man. That's good. Well, I'm glad you made it through and made it home safely, which is the important part.
Today. I came home today. Oh, okay, I had to sleep at somebody else's house because I couldn't drive.
I had to have Jeremy come pick me up once from a show because I felt like I was getting a little sick. So I was like, yeah, I'm not going to drink tonight. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, but I had this this giant edible of like a – I had a giant edible of a – what is it? A Rice Krispie square, right? Mm-hmm. And I ate about half of it. And that thing – I was hosting this show. And, man, it hit me like a fucking ton of bricks. I was so ridiculously done and bombing that – The guy who booked me for the show, he was just like, yeah, man, you look real bad. You don't need to go back up there. And so I was like, thank you. I'm not really feeling that good. I was bombing. It sucked so bad. And I remember getting in my car and just about to start to go home. I'm like 10 minutes away from my house. And I'm like, I can't even operate a vehicle right now. Like, I can't even do it. So I had to call Jeremy to come pick me up because he lived right up the street at the lovely bar Ampieri's, which is a staple of Catonsville. And yeah, he had to go drive me home and shame me the entire time.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I'm not going to lie. Good brothering, Jeremy. I was going to call Eric, but I was like, it's Halloween, and I don't think Eric can drive to Harrisburg to save me. So I just cried by myself for a while about it.
Oh, yeah, I was in no driving mood, let me tell you. It was going to be bad.
No, that's okay. That's all right. I've learned my lesson. No more edibles.
I don't remember actually shaming you doing that. Did I give like the disapproving look like, oh, was that the extent of my complaining?
I think the most of the complaining was that I made you leave the house when you were already didn't want to. So that was number one.
No, and then it was a late at night, and I think I was very tired, so...
It was, I was all good though, man. I was all good after that.
And I think I had been drinking, so.
I do have an Honest Ashley moment if you have
Ashley. You know what? I didn't have it queued up, but if you fill for just a second here, I can have it queued up.
Sure. Yeah, I'm very excited to be vulnerable and open very briefly with our audience. And I know you're like, what else could she possibly have after admitting that she way overdid the THC? But trust me, I've got it.
Which brings us to our favorite segment, Honest Ash, where comedian Ashley Pontius shares an honest moment from her life. And now here is Ashley Pontius.
Hi there, listeners. It's Ashley. I'm here to tell you that if you ever find yourself in a situation like I was last night, and you really have to go to the bathroom, don't shit your pants. Find an empty bathroom that no one's been using in over 2 years, and the water's been turned off, and it has no toilet paper. Do a dry shit, and leave.
This is another moment with Honest Ash, with Ashley Pontius. Ashley, why? Why? You're one step away from just getting a colostomy bag at this point. If anything, it would be better if you just pre-wrapped your asshole before you leave the house.
It was, but look, I didn't shit myself. I was like, I'm high, but I'm able to go to the bathroom. But I'm like, I don't know whose bathroom this is, but I'm going to use it. And it had definitely not been used in a long time. It had no toilet paper. And I was like, well, we're just going to shit and leave.
So I like, have we mentioned on either of these broadcasts that I got the Purple Power Hour theme on Rob and Joe on 98 Rock?
You know, I don't know if we have mentioned it, but yeah, I mean, it's a big deal. We know about it.
Pretty sure.
Oh, we did mention it. Okay.
Yeah, we did. I don't think you can stop talking about it, as a matter of fact.
Well, I think this was a bye week for the Ravens last Sunday, and they didn't even have a Purple Power Hour Monday.
Ugh, God.
And I think I text Joe and I said, so are you gonna play the theme? But they're not gonna play it anymore, they told me. So
son of a bitch.
So I got it on 2 whole weeks.
But hey, that's pretty good, man. That's pretty good. Hey, if they lose to the Steelers, then we know why. It's because they didn't play the Purple Power Hour song.
Exactly.
So there you go.
Well, by the way, because they're not gonna play this theme anymore, my plan is to make 5 more themes for them.
Now that's good. Double, triple, and quadruple that ass down until you get it.
And at least one of them is going to be the James Taylor Purple Power Hour version.
I'm scared to ask what it's like at this point, but I mean, surprise me. That's what
I. It's like James Taylor.
Okay. I couldn't name one James Taylor song, if I'm going to be honest with you. I'll come clean.
How about the one that I sing in Vacation?
What's that? What's that one?
Mama was a mockingbird, mockingbird,
mockingbird. Is that the one that they sing in Dumb and Dumber too? The same song,
yeah. Probably. Yeah.
Mock, yeah, ing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. That's a James Taylor thing. I didn't know that. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, but that's one of his more rockin' tunes.
I like James Taylor. He does I've Seen Fire and I've Seen Rain.
Yeah, I know that song, too. Yeah, that's a pretty good song.
Wait a second. Do you have to play your special soft rock tunes to us, James Taylor, while we're up in space? And by the way, he also plays Olsen guitars, which are like usually about $10,000, and I think he only makes like 25 guitars a year.
Wow.
You're on like a backup list of like 10 years to get your guitar when you pay $10,000 up front.
Oh my gosh. Well, who knew?
Yeah. Well, yeah, before Taylor's, they were the shit guitar. And Taylor's are pretty good. They can compare to Olsen's these days.
Have you ever played a $10,000 guitar before? Is there a big, what's the difference
put enough like different inlays and shit, you can easily make a guitar $10,000, but just luthier work alone and for how in demand they are, there's Olsen's, and otherwise there's your fancier wood of Paul Reed Smith's. Yeah, you can easily play a $10,000 guitar. Yeah. You've got Brew Bakers that are made here in Baltimore.
No, what
they're averaging $5,000 to $8,000.
I guess what the question, have you ever touched and held and played a $10,000 guitar? What does it feel like? Like, what is, how do you tell? Like, if they told you in a blind thing, if you picked up a fucking just Ibanez and then you picked up that $10,000 guitar and played, would you be able to tell the difference between the two?
Between an Ibanez and a $10,000?
Yeah, or let's just
not
say
blind.
Let's just say like a $500 Les Paul, you know, fucking guitar. Would you be able to Epiphone? Like, if you picked up the two, like with a blindfold on, would you be like, "Hey, I know this one is the $10,000 guitar"?
No. Well, the first thing is one of the $10,000 guitars I picked up was definitely like a 12 string classical. And I forget which brand it was. I used to know all the fancy classical brands that you don't even see them in stores. It's only fancy classical players that have them, like my teacher. But, you know, you probably can't get an 8 or 12 string classical guitar for anywhere less than $5,000.
Okay. So. See, I'd like to think, like, if it's a $10,000 guitar, I want it to be made out of, like, the bones of my enemies. You know what I mean?
Right, something. Exactly. And it's the fancy inlays and the fancier wood. And I'm sure they could make it out of plywood for, like, you know, $1,000 or less.
Boys,
or even $500 less.
Very moist. You're like, bone.
Oh, yeah, you like this guitar inlay?
It's like a guitar with a big old suction cup dildo on the front of it.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, hey, should we get into Fansgiving's movie this week?
Yes.
Okay, we're going over the 1988 classic, The Blob, but The Blob is actually a remake from the original Blob that it was made 30 years prior, 1958, starring Steve McQueen, and here's the intro music for the original Blob right here, okay?
Beware of the blob, it creeps and leaps and glides and slides across the floor, right through the door and all around the wall, a splotch, a blob. Be careful of the blob.
Oh man, what a fun. Oh man. That almost sounds like something that, like, you know, if Quentin Tarantino hears it, he would, like, think of a way to make a torture scene out of that song, you know? It is the blob.
Yeah, either dance around with your shaving fucking knife.
Your shaving knife. Yeah, your straight razor.
Or,
I gotcha.
Or you just feel like, you know, raping somebody with your gimp watching in the basement.
Now we're talking. That's the Jeremy Woodworth I knew.
Exactly.
Now, you made your own Blob theme song, Jeremy, for 1988's Blob.
I felt like it needed a little updating to 1988. So.
All right, so here's Jeremy's Blob theme song. Here we go.
Hey, it's the nutty song about the blob. That's right. It eats your skin and then you die. In extreme pain, eating all your legs while you're on the examining table. Then your legs are gone. It's the blob! It's new, it envelops you, and your girlfriend takes your arm, but your arm falls off, and then she falls asleep, and she gets blamed for your murder, cause you're gone. You're the blob! You look just like giant pink balls when you envelop a whole total booth. Yeah, that's the blob. Then you tear off someone's face. You're the blob! You suck someone through a drain hole by their arm, and then their arms and legs are coming out the hole, but then you don't take their shoes. It's the blob! someone through a bookshelf the way they don't bend. Just like the guy who had the toxic waste from RoboCop. You're the Blob! He's crazy nutty. It's the Blob. He's like a giant amoeba.
So good.
Sucking people into him.
Wow, Jeremy, what a magical Blob song you made right there.
Yeah, I think it's going to sell millions.
Sell millions.
I wish I could go back and lose my virginity to it.
The Blob song stays on while we fuck.
Because you're being short of an abortion.
Oh, man.
Who needs the morning pill when you can listen to this music? So.
Well, I love, Jeremy, I love that you put, you mentioned Paul McCrane, I think his name is. Paul McCrane from RoboCop, yeah. Who plays one of the officers in this movie. He is the guy who gets toxic waste splashed on him during the original RoboCop, which is probably one of the coolest death scenes in all of filmdom. But what the fuck is his name? Russell?
Kurt Russell.
It's Chuck Russell. There you go.
Chuck Russell.
Hey, great director, Chuck Russell, right? He's actually directed The Mask as well, and the movie Eraser, Jeremy, as well as Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, The Dream Warriors, quite possibly one of the best installments in the Nightmare on Elm Street series.
You found
in
your
my
dream power, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's some good stuff, okay? So, but the director, Chuck Russell, actually referred to Paul McCrane as because he was in RoboCop. He mentioned him. He called him the melty guy. So he just.
And by the way, if you slow-mo the scene of him getting hit by the SUX 6000, the funny thing is that not only does it hit his body, but his head rolls down this hood over the windshield. So.
It is pretty good. It is pretty good.
And can I say my favorite line from Melty Guy from RoboCop?
Yeah, yeah. So, obviously, this is a remake of the 1958 original one. We've mentioned that a couple times. But, hey, the original one is a cult classic in and of itself. In fact, the movie theater where they filmed the original one is still intact in Pennsylvania. And every year they have what's called Blobfest, where they celebrate all things from the original Blob movie. So, very interesting.
I had no idea they did that. And I wonder if I need to sue them, though, for copyright infringement, because I also do Blobfest, but it's when I fuck a bunch of fat dudes. Yeah. I'm just like 24 hours, nonstop, all weekend. Bring me.
So, so the directors and the screenwriter for this, Frank Darabont and Chuck Russell. Now, Frank Darabont, he actually adapted a lot of movies for the great writer Stephen King. And if you're watching this movie, he actually throws a lot of Stephen King references into this, like our main character, one of our main protagonists, Brian Flagg, played by the great Kevin Dillon, is a toss up and a nod to Randall Flagg from Stephen King's The Stand, which is
I did notice that.
And also another fun thing, Shawnee Smith, who's in this movie playing one of the protagonists, she would go on later to actually be in The Stand. So look at
the crazy bitch that kisses Rob Lowe.
Yes, exactly. That crazy bitch.
And makes fun of Bill Fagerbakke because he's retarded.
Yeah, she does. Throw me.
And also one more Stand reference in this. He also the guy who gets killed, the bum who's the first guy who dies in this movie. He's actually known as Can Man, of course, the Trash Can Man from The Stand. So lots of Stephen King Stand references in this piece.
And you know what Bill Fagerbakke says, right?
What does he say?
M-O-O-N, that spells retarded.
The one thing about that actor is that he was also the voice of Patrick on SpongeBob, and I never could not hear him going, M-O-O-N, that spells Krabby Patty, SpongeBob.
Hey, Coach. I hope Flag doesn't try to kill us all before the next football game.
So Frank Darabont and Chuck Russell, who directed and wrote the screenplay for this, actually pitched The Blob to New Line Cinema, who decided to pass on it, but it was a good thing because these two actually still got hired to do Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, The Dream Warriors. So they did this, and then the very next year you just got The Blob anyway through Universal Pictures. Or this one was TriStar, I believe, is actually the
And let's
the
not forget
for
that Darabont did a little film called The Shawshank Redemption and Walking Dead. So.
Yeah, well, like I said, he has adapted many Stephen King properties. Not The Walking Dead, of course, but, you know, there you go.
I do have a question, real quick. The Stuff. I mean, was The Stuff, I assume, kind of like a ripoff to The Blob? I mean, I know they're a little bit different, but it seems like obviously a ton of similarities in some way. I don't know what the year difference was between the two.
I feel like The Stuff is the happy medium in between Street Trash and this movie, right? Like,
right.
It's like The Stuff is just, it lives right in between where The Blob is and where Street Trash is. It's like a slightly better version of Street Trash and a slightly worse version of The Blob. So
well Viper is just a freak accident, because when you leave liquor too long in a basement it goes bad. But The Stuff is obviously a conspiratorial monster that is sold under the pretext of taking over the world. So
that is true. So I know I'd mentioned some of the cast for this. Obviously, you have Brian Flagg, who's played by Kevin Dillon, brother of Matt Dillon. And I had a hard time thinking of this. You know, Kevin Dillon, he does a fine job in this movie. And at the time, obviously, Matt Dillon, heartthrob of the 80s, has been in some great movies. I think today, I'm going to say this boldly, I think Kevin Dillon is a bigger star than Matt Dillon, okay? And I'll take the heat and whatever you got to throw back at me for that.
Well, obviously because of the Entourage.
Yeah.
But, you know, Matt Dillon hasn't done much other than There's Something About Mary in the last 30 years, so.
Yeah, I think Kevin Dillon is a bigger star now than his brother.
But I think he was straight off of a Platoon on this.
Yes,
when he was torturing that Vietnamese retarded guy, so so.
Well, he's in, and hey, listen, he was in Poseidon, and don't forget, he's also in The Doors. So I mean,
good roles.
He's in some pretty big time movies, and I didn't even think about it because everybody's like, oh, Matt Dillon, you know, like he's fucking Matt Dillon, but I don't really give a shit about Matt Dillon movies. I've seen more Kevin Dillon movies.
Everybody thinks out of the brothers, Alec Dillon is the biggest of them all.
Yes.
But I think Daniel and Steven are still bigger Dillon brothers. So.
No. Also, there's another horror kind of icon in this. Sheriff Herb, who's played by Jeffrey Dunham. DeMunn. Jeffrey DeMunn, who also plays a sheriff in another movie that we've done for the Quality Time podcast. Jeremy, what is that?
Sheriff?
Yeah, he plays a sheriff in another movie that we've definitely done. And I could tell you the main actor, but it would give it away. It's definitely one of your favorite movies, though.
Hell Comes to Frogtown.
No. If I said Rutger Hauer, would that jog your memory?
Oh, yeah. Blind Fury.
Yeah, there you go. I hate you. All right, so...
Blade Runner.
of course, he plays a sheriff also in the movie The Hitcher. So The Hitcher,
but let's not forget that he's Mr. RV guy in The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but he was also in The Green Mile. Like, he's done a ton of Stephen King's like miniseries and pieces, because then he also did Storm of the Century, which is a Stephen King.
Also a really good serial killer in Citizen X. The first story of the Russian serial killer that killed kids.
Oh, yeah.
I love killer.
Great
actor.
What is his name? Karolinko or Karchinko, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, one of those things that sounds like he's Asian, but he ain't. No, that is a good movie, Citizen X. It was a, I think it was a HBO Ridge at the time, but he is a total monster. He makes Albert Fish seem like a fucking Disney Channel thing.
The funny thing is they had a trial for him, and it's like, oh, well, your trial's over. We walk you down a long corridor and then shoot you right in the head. So that's the end of the movie. Hey, everybody. Woo-hoo!
Yeah, his big thing, because I do listen to a lot of true crime podcasts and stuff like that, he actually tried to make a deal with the Soviet Union and said, hey, I shouldn't be shot by a firing squad. You guys should study my brain and, look at it and see what's different about it. Because he's like, I don't know if you guys know this, I'm pretty fucked up. So,
well, they studied his brain after it was on the wall.
Yes, exactly.
Here's a piece. Probably looking at it under a microscope.
Another fun cameo in this movie. He's just known as Soldier 2 in this film, but the great Bill Moseley is also in this film and actually has a couple speaking lines. He's the guy that's down in the sewer that has the bazooka for them. So
I'm pretty sure this was between Texas Chainsaw 2 and Night of the Living Dead remake.
Yeah, right around those lines. So lots of good horror fandoms in this movie. Now,
Don't forget my other favorite cameo, and that's with the doctor in the office, is Jack Nance, otherwise known as Eraserhead.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that guy. Well, they also have, well, we'll get to him when he comes up, but the lady who plays Meg's dad, or the guy who plays Meg's dad, who's also the pharmacy owner, he's also in, like, the Sandlot gang, and I believe he plays Babe Ruth in another movie, too, I think in Field of Dreams or something like that.
Yeah.
So he's that guy's made a legacy of just being the guy who looks kind of like Babe Ruth, so.
He really looks like he walked right out of the 50s, and he should be in, like, every Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, he would be great. I think he would be great if he's still alive. I wonder.
No, he was a chiller literally last year.
Art LaFleur is his name.
I had a chance, but I was like, eh, he's not big enough an actor for me to pay out. So.
Yeah, fuck him. So anyway, this movie had a budget of $19 million, and $9 million of that budget went to just the special effects in this movie. So,
which I do love. I have to tell you guys, personally, I think the special effects on this were pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, out of all the practical effects movies of the 80s, I think this has some of the coolest death scenes, hands down. And say what you will about some of the Hellraisers, more particularly Hellraiser 2, or even some of the Nightmare on Elm Streets. This one, you know, apart from The Thing, probably my favorite practical effects movie. Everything looks really, like, pretty real and, like, ripped apart and gross, and I fucking love it. And I just remember vividly, I haven't watched this movie since I was a child, but I always remember, like, oh, man, the Blob is fucking scary. It's a liquid thing that'll melt your skin off, and it will fucking rip you apart real bad.
Tell me that it does not remind you guys of my cervical mucus.
Well, if you'd stop sending it to us, Ashley, we wouldn't have to make the comparison.
I think they could still make another remake of this, and it would just be called The Big Giant Pink Balls, about this guy whose balls just keep getting larger and larger, and he kills people by covering them with his giant balls. So eventually, they take... So eventually he can't move anymore. So it's like, as long as we stay away from his giant balls, we'll still be alive. So
I feel attacked. I feel attacked.
All the people with elephantitis in the balls. This is the most offensive movie we've ever seen. If we ever get out of our homes, we'll protest this movie. So
yeah, if anybody wants to recommend me for this movie, I can totally pretend to be like, no, don't put your balls on my chin. I don't want it. Save me.
Oh, gosh.
So, 12 minutes into this movie, we get to meet the first 12 minutes, we get to meet all of our main players. We get to meet, obviously, Brian Fleck, Meg, Paul Taylor, who's the jock trying to take Meg out, Sheriff Herb, and all of the gang. But 12 minutes in, our sweet homeless man out in the woods sees a space meteorite crash into the Earth, and he goes and investigates, and that motherfucker latches onto him real quick. And a little fun thing, I know, digging deep, which is what we do here, is... I pulled some audio. Well, I kind of made some audio. Now, a little known fact about this, because they blew their budget on just special effects for this movie, is that they actually did hire a professional actor at one time to play the Blob in this film. And that, of course, is Academy Award winning actor Mr. Marlon Brando to actually play the Blob. And so I kind of reimagined what it would be like if Marlon Brando, every time he kills somebody, the Blob kills somebody in this movie, would it be like if Marlon Brando actually had gone through and been the Blob in this film? So, you know, let me set the stage. It's the guy, he comes over, he sees the Blob thing in like the rock, he picks it up with a stick, and he picks it up, and all you hear is...
Marlon, what have I ever done to make you take me so disrespectfully?
So there you go. That's Marlon Brando attacking right there. Do I have like 20 more audio clips of Marlon Brando saying things? Maybe as we go on through the show,
you might hear
some more of that. We also find out that I'll play Jeremy's second song that he has. It's really good for our hero who's not shown up exactly yet. We'll get to him soon. So Brian is driving down the street, and Brian is in the woods near where he is, and he sees him trying to cut off his own hand with a hatchet, and he stops him, which is a real dick move for somebody who's will eventually be the hero of this film. Now Brian Flagg ends up, you know, is the main hero right now. It's kind of a misdirection, and you think it's old Paul Taylor, but no, our real hero is this beautiful mulleted Dylan family member. And Jeremy, you made a little song for him. Would you like to preface it with anything else other than what I've said?
I call it the hero song.
Okay, here's Jeremy's hero song.
Oh no, look out, here comes the Blob, gonna kill everybody. But there's only one man stop the Blob. Who do you think that man is? I'll give you a hint. He's the one with the mullet! The mullet with the mullet! Oh yes, he may have a motorcycle. Girlfriend! But there's one thing that makes him different than all the others. That's right! You'll never guess! It's a mullet!
It's a mullet.
Oh, it's funny that you mentioned that, because director Chuck Chuck Russell actually made Kevin Dillon wear hair extensions so he could have a mullet in this movie. And he was just like, nope, nah. Somebody's going to save the day. This motherfucker better look like Randy Travis stat. So,
I was so upset. Like, the minute I saw that hair, I have never been drier in my whole life. I was just like, ew, is this Eric if he was like a size 2? Like, this is horrible. I was just waiting for Eric to be like, I can't wait to like trim down, get me a leather jacket, get some acid wash jeans, regrow the mullet. I was like, no.
I'm not going to lie, I loved everything about his look. I don't see what
no.
you need to get on the level, lady.
No.
You know, I'm thinking that in the 80s or 90s, if they could have made a double Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, that they could have put Kevin Dillon with Rowdy Roddy Piper and call it Double Mullet.
Double Mullet.
So. I'm going to give you a mullet towel cocktail. I screwed that up.
So, There is also this fun scene where we get to meet who we will find out is Meg's dad. He's actually the pharmacist in this movie. And Scott goes to go buy some condoms, but the Reverend pulls up on him as he's doing this. So he tells him they're actually for his friend, Paul. And he's pointing at him. He's like, yeah, this guy really loves chicks. And he's just embarrassed to buy them. And he's pointing the pharmacist out to that guy. And of course, he goes when he leaves here with the, he buys them ribbed condoms or whatever. And then of course when Paul goes and picks up his date Meg, he gets to meet her father and he just calls him Ribbed, and that's it. Just refers to him as Ribbed. It was a magical scene. It's pretty funny. So as Meg though and Brian are driving down the street, they end up hitting the guy who's trying to run for his life with the blob on his hand. They meet up obviously with Brian and they end up taking that guy into the hospital, but shit pops off when you get to the hospital. I mean, they go and look at it and it is it's completely like eaten his torso away in like 5 or 6 minutes, and you're like, oh man, this isn't good at all. And
I feel after eating Chipotle.
Yes. And so Brian or Paul goes to call the police, right? He's like, I gotta get the sheriff over here ASAP. And as he does that, he gets enveloped by the blob that's crawling on the ceiling. And I think it's probably one of the coolest deaths in this is when Meg comes in to go see him and it's just like pulling his fucking face back like this, like that, and she grabs his arm and his arm fucking falls off in her hand. Such a great death scene in this part of the movie.
And by the way, I'd like to apologize to all the listeners because I didn't take the time to do the Lionel Richie version of "Oh, what a feeling, it's the blob on the ceiling." So
but just imagine how, put yourself in Paul's shoes, how terrifying it is. You look up and you just see this.
"I've been trained, men good living, please protect the children of courts of law.
I mean, that's a very, very scary moment, just seeing a full pink Marlon Brando, no makeup. It's just him nude slithering across the ceiling as he falls upon you.
Or like, you know, you don't really look around even though you're right on head height as he puts his saggy balls right on your head.
Yes.
Oh, no, again, don't.
Hope you don't mind if I want my saggy balls on your forehead. I'm Marlon Brando, damn it.
Now, the effect that you see where he's like getting his face pulled back with the blob, that's actually the actor Donovan Leaked, who's playing Paul Taylor in this movie, who's getting ripped back. And they said, yeah, we basically waterboarded him to make that effect work. And it was apparently really horrible. He couldn't breathe at all. So when you're seeing his face get ripped back, that's a real guy under there who's getting tortured. So
that's horrifying.
Good stuff. It was worth the shot. I like it.
And they actually pulled his arm off.
And they actually, yeah, he's actually an amputee now. So, sorry about that.
amputee.
So they end up things get fucking out of control after that. The blob heads to Scott, who's at makeout point with his girlfriend, who's basically trying to date rape a girl in his little thing, right? Like he has a full bar.
She's liquored up.
Yeah, she's liquored up. He's like, well, let me just make you another one. And he's legit trying to date rape a girl on a mountain up there. And she's passed out, and he goes in there to start feeling on her bubbies while she's passed out, like he's fucking Dr. Huxtable here. And of course the blob's already gotten her and fucking attacks him and melts her fucking caves her face in. Another great fucking effect. I loved it to death. But I mean, again, how scary is it? Imagine yourself making out, about to cop your first rapey feel on top of a mountain, and you just hear this.
Now you come to me and say, I'm calling out to give you justice.
Anyway, so
I'm so glad that that was what we spent our time on today.
This is, I spent extra time to make all these Marlon Brando drops as the Blob. So it just makes it, I think it makes it a lot scarier.
It's a lot better than the movie. So,
but what you don't understand is that as he gets more people, he gets more powerful. You know, the Blob eats more things, so like he gets more and more out of control. And there's maybe an escalation of sound.
Did we mention the actress's name?
No, go ahead.
I think it's Elena Alienak or something. But of course, she's the also the one that strips in the movie Under Siege with Steven Seagal.
Oh, really? Wow.
But also, this might have been before it. And I think this is her how many years after making E.T. as the little girl in the class that Elliot kisses.
Wow, these are all things I didn't know. And yes, Under Siege does come after that, because I believe it's like 92 or 93 Under Siege comes out. Mm-hmm. And I remember, I think that was the first pair of titties I saw in a movie. And I really, I thought they were great. I think she got
an enlargement between then and then. So.
Yeah, I didn't recognize her regular breasts in this film, let me tell you.
Like, what are these A's?
Ugh. So, yeah, so Scott's now dead, and that's not fucking good. The motherfucking Blob is on the loose. The next real major scene is the diner scene, which is, God, the cook at the diner who gets killed when the thing is clogged up is fucking a 10 out of 10 kill. I mean, every kill in this movie is fucking, they escalate it and just make it better and better somehow. But the Blob comes and reaches up from the drain that he's trying to unclog and then pulls his whole head and body, just like mincing it through the little fucking pipe. And it is so goddamn good. I loved it so much as he's just reaching down there and just.
You said you'd come into my house and then my daughters to be married and you'd ask me for murder.
And so, just kills him immediately. And they also killed the lady in the phone booth, who's like the owner of the diner. She's frantically calling for the sheriff, but the Blob completely envelops this fucking thing. And she sees that the sheriff's already been sucked up in it and his face is all mangled. Like, and then it just crushes all around her and then sweeps her up real good, too. So solid kills.
At least he tried to like help her out of the phone booth.
Yeah, he's like, hey, can I help you? Do you want to still go on a date? Hey, do you like The Godfather 2?
Hey, can I have my card back?
So, now the preacher also sees the Blob, so it's worth noting that the preacher goes in and finds some frozen chunks of the Blob, because as Meg and Brian run from the Blob inside the diner, they hide in the meat locker and they realize, ooh, the cold, it doesn't like the cold in there. And so the preacher goes in and he collects some frozen chunks of the Blob, so that'll come into play for the end here. So
do you know what else?
I'm sorry, go ahead, Ash.
No, I was just saying you gotta keep your Blob nice and moist. Yes, Jeremy.
You know what else doesn't like the cold?
What's that?
Titties.
Big floppy balls.
I love your big floppy balls reference, man. It's the best.
Yeah, floppy balls.
You might have to pop them out for proof, Jeremy. I'm starting to wonder. Maybe you're all talk. Maybe you don't have those big bulldozer balls.
Last year was the first year that my balls reached the water in the toilet. So.
Oh yeah, brother. Oh yeah.
Wait till your labia gets there.
or as we like to call them, hound dog ears.
Oh, that's bad.
So the next real major scene, well, in the meantime, the government shows up because the government's going to take over now. Mm-hmm. And they're putting the town on quarantine. But really, they just know the whole town is fucked and the Blob is going to eat everyone. Luckily, Brian hears this and tries to go warn the townsfolk about the impending doom and that the government is not our friends, as it never is. Just remember that. So it at the local movie theater, which is also a scene ripped out of the original movie. The climax of the movie also happens at a movie theater. The blob comes in through the air ducts and ends up killing the projectionist. Jeremy, who is this projectionist from? Did you recognize him?
I definitely recognize him as a hog wallet from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He's also been in The Happening and a couple other movies. So
yeah, I couldn't put my finger on it. I was like, I need to look this guy up, but I definitely recognize him, and I couldn't put my finger on it. Mm-hmm. So it kills the projectionist by sucking him up into the ceiling, and another great, like, looks straight out of like the movie From Beyond as it like melts his whole face into the blob, like that. Oh man, just another great $9 million well spent for this film. Then it goes into the movie theater proper and just starts fucking shit up all left and right, eating more people. You find a lady with her half of her face torn off. Meg is able to save her younger brother as well as his best friend as they flee into the sewers where the blob pursues them. And unfortunately, in the sewers, shit doesn't go great. She actually gets one of the kids killed, like her brother's little friend, who gets epically murdered by the blob. And I love that they kill the first guy that they kill in a classic Hitchcock way is like a guy you think is the main character, which was Paul. They kill him up in the first act. They're like, well, fuck, man, anybody can die. And then in the back of your head, it was like, well, these two kids are going to be fine. It's not like they're going to kill a kid. And like, nope, we're going to kill a fucking 9-year-old kid in this movie. So yeah. I do like that a lot about this movie. The government comes in. There's some government goons shoot guns at it, even though they know this won't work. And with the help of Brian, Meg is able to also escape the sewers because he just rides his dirt. He rides a motorcycle in sewers, which I thought was the most ridiculous part of this movie. Is just the idea of it's like, yeah, I got to get out of here. Let's go through the sewers, like fucking cowabunga, dude. I love
that Eric's right that the most ridiculous thing about a movie about a killer blob from outer space is that this kid rides through sewers.
Yes. Why is he doing it? I don't understand why he's there. Like, I get he's fleeing that. But at what point do you, like, where do you stop? And just like, I'm riding a fucking motorcycle in a sewer. I can't do this. Like, proceed on foot at this point. So
my other favorite part, like you point out, is that, you know, that they kill people that you don't expect to get killed. Kind of like the deleted scene in Goonies where they go back to the cave and Sloth is actually eating Corey Feldman because he's like a retarded freak. So.
Ooh, Rocky Road? And he's just...
No, that's a human! Sloths don't eat people! That's why we keep you locked up!
You ate Dad and this is why you have to live here!
Everybody knows if you're retarded, you just chain him up in a basement somewhere. So.
Yeah.
And Chunk is next to him, just feasting on the leg, and he gets up and he's like, a triple shovel, just shakes a little fat butt.
So
inhuman. How dare you treat him like that? Well, no, he's going to eat somebody. He's going to kill somebody and eat them. So.
Brian and Meg finally meet up with one of the surviving government goons, which is the great Bill Moseley. And the rest of the government officials lock them down in the sewer so they can't get out. And luckily, Bill Moseley has a rocket launcher on his back, which I think is very, very funny that it never occurred to him, like, maybe I should use this fucking rocket launcher at some point. Oh, well. And so Brian takes the rocket launcher and then shoots it with one hand, which I don't think is possible that you can hold it with one hand underneath a sewer grate and then blow the top off of a sewer without permanently damaging your body to the point of where you have no more limbs anymore. But, you know, movie magic, it works. They end up climbing out. Also, just blows the top of this thing off, doesn't like ruin and collapse the whole tunnel, which is what should happen, or just the impact and the compression that happens that it instantly murders all of you from blowing up something that close to you. But again, they get up, and then Brian tells them that, no, the government, man, they're the ones behind all this. How did you think they got here this fast? And then the game's like, yeah, the government, boo!
Wait a second, we should listen to him. He has a mullet.
Yes. But as they're talking about all this, the blob comes up from underneath there, and he's fucking fully, I mean, this is the mega blob now. It pulls the main government official down and then kills him pretty cool, and like the goo comes up inside of his mask, which is pretty badass. And then I love the government responses, which they take like 5 or 6 government guys in like the suits, and they just start shooting guns all at the same time into the thing, which they know isn't effective. But I love it's like that Predator moment where they just shoot guns for 30 seconds into it and then throw a bunch of grenades in. And they're like, yep, problem solved. But problem is not solved, because the blob is eaten like more than a dozen people now and is fucking huge. And now you just have like this massive.
You said you'd come in my house.
And it's just, it's a million Marlon Brando voices all at once. And then just starts ripping the town apart. They all flee for the local church and barricade the town folk within. And they have figured out that cold works, so they have like a little fire extinguisher that they're trying to do it. But obviously the blob is too large. But luckily, they go to fucking sweet Tim Dillon. I called him Tim Dillon, who is a great comedian, but not
Frank,
the actor.
Frank Dillon.
Frank Dillon. Frank Gyllenhouse. And Brian goes and grabs the Snowmaker Mobile, which is just, you know, that's a town necessity that you have to have when you live in the mountains. You got to have the ability to have a truck that is mobile, that can also make snow. And after a little fight, they're able to overturn the truck and then set some explosives and blow up all the CO2 canisters, basically turning the blob into nothing but pretty little fucking purple ice cubes and saving the day.
You know my other favorite, Kevin Dillon? That's yes. Kevin Dillon Petticord.
Hell yeah, Kevin Dillon Petticord, shout outs from the show Baskets, the body double of the great whatever the fuck his name is. It doesn't
Chris
matter.
Farley.
Chris Farley, yes. Yes.
Yeah, with a beard.
Dillon Petticord, guys. Anyway, so that brings a resolution to the movie for the most part. But I also, because I watched the 1958 Blob today, do you know how much dumber the ending to the Blob 1958 is? They get 100 fire extinguishers with CO2 and then freeze the blob. And they were like, well, what are you going to do? Yeah, I think you should just drop it off in Antarctica or something. It'll never freeze there. And the last scene of the movie is that the just dropping a giant blob with like a thing, and it just lands and just says the end. Question mark?
And then it becomes the thing.
Yes, that actually is the prequel to the thing. Is the 1958 the Blob?
Because what thoughtful titles? The Blob, the thing.
And bring on Larry Hagman.
So, and then in the final scene of this 1988 Blob, the day is saved, but the preacher, who has now been sent out as he's basically like an evangelist that works out of tents. They ask him, he's talking about the Day of Reckoning, and his face is scarred from his encounter with the Blob, but keep in mind, he did steal those little blob chunks, and
ma'am.
The Day of Reckoning. How far off?
Soon, madam. Soon.
And he looks at it, and he holds up his little tiny blob he has in a little mason jar like that.
The Lord will give me a sign.
Oh, no. So, yes, that it ends on a cliffhanger for the Blob sequel right there. So
that terrifies me, because I think I'm doing a podcast with the Blob.
And the Day of Reckoning was the day that you said I do to two Woodworth brothers on a podcast about horror films and bad 80s movies. Man. Oh,
so are they going to follow this with the Blob, the Quickening? Or the blob goes to Washington.
Yes, yes. Hey, speaking of, shout outs, Sean Connery, a longtime listener of the show. I don't know if you guys have ever heard him, but he passed at 90 years old yesterday, and we do miss him. I will say the funniest tweet I've seen about Sean Connery's passing was a tweet that said, RIP Sean Connery. Also, congratulations to Christopher Lambert. There can be only one. So I did like that. He is now the only Highlander other than the Kurgan, to be fair, Clancy Brown. So I don't like that he was overlooked. But, you know, hey, the last good guy, Christopher Lambert, the most French, Scottish guy who got taught by an Egyptian who was also somehow Scottish in a movie. Check out our Highlander episode for more details about that. It was a fun app. Anyway, final thoughts on The Blob, Ashley Pontius.
Oh, man, I loved it. I actually really enjoyed this film. I, again, appreciate the fan that suggested this film. If you would
shout
like
out
to see
Brian
sequel,
Myers. Brian Myers.
Yeah, again, if you would like to see a sequel, I would also like to, again, plug my OnlyFans at albacoretuna_69.
albacoretuna_69. Check that out.
Alba whore.
Oh, alba whore.
It's the tuna with the most dolphin in it. 90% dolphin and 10% tuna.
Yeah, and instead of the tuna being soaked in water, it's soaked in pussy juice.
Oh, yeah, my kind. How would you even tell the difference?
Enough yeast to make some bread with.
Okay.
Jeremy, your final thoughts on 1988's The Blob.
I like to give my last seconds to Joe Seneca, otherwise known as the crazy black scientist guy, Dr. Meadows, because he's the one that teaches the young karate kid how to kick Steve Vai's ass on guitar and blues guitar.
Oh, so, well, yeah, that's a good point. I forgot about that. That's awesome.
And this year was my chance to get to see Cobra Kai, both Karate Kid and Mr. Coors Beer, come to a show. But no, thanks to COVID, I didn't get to see anybody this year, even though I could afford to get autographs from everybody. And I bought my own Telecaster, which is my most hated guitar of all time, just to get signed by the Karate Kid because he was in movie Crossroads with this black guy who taught him how to play guitar and beat Steve Vai.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Ashley, where can people find you at, hon?
You can always find me on social media at Ashley Pontius Laughs, and you can follow me for updates on shows and appearances.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely check her out. You can check all things Eric Comedy at ericcomedy.com. It's Eric with a K, comedy with a C. The second Saturday shit show is free, and every second Saturday of the month, hey, the Auto Bar could use your help. They're doing a lot of virtual shows, just opening back up. There's always fundraisers. It's important to keep that venue alive. Hosted by Mike Quinlan and former host of the show, Miss Kimberly Callahan. Otherwise, check out our merch store, all that shit at ericcomedy.com, the Woodworth Brothers Quality Time Emporium. Jeremy, take us out.
Hora, you must make a friend with my giant soggy pink balls.
Oh no, look out, here comes the blob, gonna kill everybody. One man who can stop the blob. Who do you think that man is? I'll give you a hint. He's the one with the bullet! The man with the bullet! Oh yes, he may have a motorcycle. Girlfriend, but there's one thing that makes him different than all the others. That's right, you'll never guess. It's a bullet. It's the bullet.
Hey, it's the nutty song about the blob. That's right. It eats your skin and then you die.
extreme pain, eating all your legs while you're on the examining table. Then your legs are gone. It's the blob! It's new. It envelops you, and your girlfriend takes your arm, but your arm falls off, and then she falls asleep, and she gets blamed for your murder, 'cause you're gone. You're the blob! You look just like giant pink balls when you envelop a whole total booth. Yeah, that's the blob. Then you tear off someone's face. You're the blob! You suck someone through a drain hole by their arm, and then their arms and legs are coming out the hole. But then you don't take their shoes. It's the blob! Then you take someone through a bookshelf the way they don't bend, just like the guy who had the toxic waste from RoboCop. You're the blob! He's crazy nutty. It's the blob. He's like a giant amoeba sucking.